this is Gilbert Godfrey. I'm here with my co-host Frank Santopadre, and this is Gilbert Godfrey's Amazing Colossal Podcast. Our guest this week is a comedian and actor who's been working pretty much nonstop since the 1950s. He was a fixture on television for decades, appearing on hit shows like The Patty Duke Show, The Andy Griffith Show, That Girl, Love American Style, The Dick Van Dyke Show, MASH, Sanford and Son, The Love Boat, Mork and Mindy, Coach, and Yes, Dear, just to name a few.
You forgot the McLean Stevenson Show on NBC. It lasted 3 episodes.
Okay, the McLean Stevenson episode. McLean Stevenson Show. If you caught any of the 3 episodes, you would have seen Ronnie Schell. But if anyone watched the McLean Stevenson Show, it wouldn't be off the air.
That's right.
Yeah, it would have lasted at least 4 shows. He also starred in his own CBS series, Good Morning World.
Yes, sir.
But it's yes.
Oh, I got to interrupt. I have to interrupt. It'll be starting January, all the reruns on Antenna TV. You guys have Antenna TV?
Oh, yeah, great. Antenna, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Good Morning World.
Well, let him get through this. Yeah, there's a lot about you here.
That'll be CBS. Go ahead, Gilbert. He thinks it's his show.
But it's perhaps best known as Jim Neighbor's friend and bunkmate.
Hey, careful.
Bunkmate Duke Slater on the long-running and wildly popular situation comedy Gomer Pyle, USMC.
Bought me a house. You do.
Feature films include The World's Strongest Man, The Shaggy D.A., Love at First Bite, The Devil and Max Devlin.
That was a piece of crap. I can say that now because it starred Bill Cosby, and I don't give a shit about him anymore.
So, you co-starred with a sexual offender. Okay.
That's good. Keep that in there. You forgot a great comedian that I did an animated film with playing his best friend called... I'll let you guess who it was. Rover Dangerfield.
Oh, yeah, sure. We got it on our on our list here. We'll get to it.
Well, watch it. God damn it. Watch it.
How to Beat the High Cost of Living.
Yes,
and
with Jessica Lange.
He's also headlined in nightclubs, Vegas showrooms. And if all that doesn't prove his versatility, he's provided voices for dozens of animated cartoons, including Captain Caveman, The Smurfs, Fred Flintstone and Friends, DuckTales, and Rugrats. In a long and very busy career, he's worked alongside some of the biggest names in the entertainment business, including Johnny Carson, Carol Burnett, The Smothers Brothers.
Yes.
Goldie Hawn, George Segal, Andy Griffith, Red Fox, Tim Conway, Phyllis Diller, Rodney Dangerfield, Groucho Marx, and, drum roll please, Cesar Romero!
We did a movie together. You know what his nickname was? You know what his nickname was around 20th Century Fox? Butch.
Yeah.
I'm serious. Did you know that?
Yes, we did.
Butch. Yes.
We'll tell you why soon.
Well, I'm beginning to think I know why.
Yes. Please welcome to the podcast one of our favorite funny men and America's slowest rising young comic.
Old comic.
Ronnie Schell.
Well, by God, it's a pleasure to finally get on after that brilliant introduction. I can't wait to hear what I'm going to say. It's really great to see you guys, and I'm
Thank
glad you,
Ronnie.
Called me. No, I'm serious. Bullshit.
Now,
but
now,
I'm really grateful because I am a fan of yours, Gilbert, and have been for years since I was a kid. And I got to tell you, whenever you want to ask,
Oh,
shall
okay.
I get my credit? Shall I get my upcoming credits out of the way?
Yeah, get them out of the way,
please.
And then we'll get, we'll get to a bunch of questions.
Okay, Ronnie sure. Shell's credits.
He's reaching into his pocket.
I hope yeah, because I just got one about 10 minutes ago. February, I'm doing a pilot with Ed Asner. You guys know Ed?
We had him on the show.
Yeah, he was
Yeah, I love Ed. Well, we did the movie. Well, you guys know this. We did the movie Gus together.
Yes.
But you knew that. So we're going to do a pilot with the girl from Dawn Wells from Gilligan's Island. And we were supposed to do it in January with Florence Henderson, but she canceled out on us.
We spoke to her, too.
We had her here, too.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny? She canceled out on us. And so they've cut the thing until February or March. Let's see. And then in May, of course, I'll be where you guys have probably played, Danville, Indiana. Hey, they pay. And yeah. It's for the big Mayberry celebration.
Oh, cool.
That's enough
for
now.
I know
now.
You've done those before.
Yeah, I do one every September in North Carolina where Andy Griffith was born.
Yeah.
Because I did two episodes of Andy Griffith. You guys didn't mention
that. Of course.
That.
And you started the spinoff.
I surely did.
Before we go on any further, I think I may have told this story once before on this show. Do you know the big story about Cesar Romero?
You're going right in for it, huh?
Yes.
No, I'd love to hear it.
Ronnie.
I'd love to hear it.
Okay. I'll see if I remember it.
Yes.
Cesar Romero.
Force yourself.
Cesar Romero
Butch.
Was, you know, he was known around town and in movies as a macho Latin
right.
lover.
Right.
And in real life, he was gay.
Yeah.
And as to quote Jerry Seinfeld, not that there's anything wrong with that. But in real life, if I remember this, it's been a while since I told it, he would surround himself with these boy toys, and he would pull his pants and underwear down.
No.
And
that I
depending on who tells you the story, he was either standing on the floor or ankle deep in warm water. That's Whoa. The only argument I've gotten.
How about the swans? Big or small?
That I don't know.
Oh, you
no one mentioned
that.
It, so okay. It's probably tiny.
Okay.
Anyway, so either on the floor or in ankle deep in warm water, these boy toys were instructed to fling with all their might orange wedges at his naked ass.
That's funny.
Do you know about this?
No, but I have a similar story about Alan Ladd. You ready?
Hey, Dirt.
This is true. This is Alan Ladd.
Oh, great.
Now, if Elena, his wife, is listening, it's too bad. But what happened was he drank quite a lot, as you know. In fact, it put him out of the business for a while. And he used to get inebriated and go down to the where they deposit all the garbage, and he would help the garbage guys in the morning for some reason. I don't know, but that's not the story. The story is every once in a while he'd gather all these girls together and he'd make a big circle. He'd get in the circle and they'd put a chicken there in the circle and he would get nude and the girls would dance around singing, "You simply got to fuck that chicken! You simply got to fuck that chicken!" That's the story.
Well, can you sing that one more time?
You simply got to fuck that chicken.
Alan Ladd, and some macho star, would stand naked in a circle of women who
yes.
circled him.
Yeah,
and they would. I'm
but they have a chicken. They'd have a chicken there.
Yeah, they'd have a chicken.
Yeah,
he was naked with a chicken. In a circle of girls, and I'm sorry, I don't think I heard this correctly. What did they start singing?
Well, they would dance around, Alan,
around.
Singing, "You simply got to fuck that chicken." That could be an apocryphal
it
story,
could be.
Whatever that means.
I don't care. When I hear a story like that, it's true.
Wow.
Pass it on. Oh, I've got a million of those. I've worked with everybody except, who's the only guy I never worked with? Oh, I know. Hey, Hey, Hoo Hoo, what's his name? Oh, won the Academy Award.
Red Buttons.
I never met or worked with him, but I worked with all the rest of them. So,
have you heard, either if you've worked with them or not, you heard some other weird sexual stories about any celebrity?
I'll get arrested for crying out loud. Well, let me think.
Why don't you, this is a good time to, now, Ronnie was a friend of Pat McCormick's.
So it's a good time to ask him about the helicopter story.
Okay. There was a story that that Pat McCormick.
Over Irene Dunne's house?
Oh, yes. You tell a story.
No, you tell it because I've sort of forgotten it, but it's a true story.
Okay. Pat McCormick had a bunch of friends in the business.
Mm-hmm.
And like once a year, I think, they would get together and try. One would take the others to dinner
exactly.
or to a celebration.
Or to Vegas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fly them somewhere.
That's true.
Take them out to a strip club or whatever the hell.
That's true.
And when it was Pat McCormick's turn, and these guys were spending a fortune on lavish dinners and everything, Pat McCormick's turn, they had them take all his friends to a heliport.
Mm-hmm.
And there they were handed a paper bag with a tuna fish sandwich and an apple. And they were all like, what the hell is this?
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, it's like, what the fuck? We spend money on this? And then they were led one by one into a helicopter. When mm-hmm. the guy would go in the helicopter, there would be a hooker in the helicopter.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
And the helicopter would circle that guy's wife's house. They were given and while they were circling his house, the hooker would blow the guy.
Oh, my God. I heard it was over Irene Dunne's house.
Irene Dunne's house?
I'm serious.
That makes it better.
It's much better.
It was over Irene Dunne's house. And they brought... Yeah.
Oh. Well, let me finish this first and then tell me your side.
Okay, because I was starting to nod off.
And then they circle the house. And when one of them got home, his wife said, "So how was your evening?" And he goes, "Oh, it was okay. How was yours?" And she said, "Well, it was strange. A helicopter kept circling the house."
That sounds
but
right.
You're saying it was actress Irene Dunne?
Irene Dunne. And he had an anti-Catholic thing, he said, but I can't remember what it was for the life of me. Because, you know, she was a staunch Catholic. And he liked to shake them up. I worked with him a lot here in town, but I stole two of his lines, which I will do forever. And I'm going to do them for you now because I think they're classics. One is, in a New York venue, you would say, "Do you all know who Yoko Ono is, right?" And then, yeah. "Do you know they had a Yoko Ono look-alike contest held in Central Park last Saturday, but they had to call it off because the crowd turned ugly?"
Great.
That's it. And the other one is, how did he tell it? Biblical scholars have come up with a well-known change from biblical times. They found out how Jesus, the Lord Jesus, could walk on water. It was winter. That was Pat.
So I take it no one ever told that joke to Irene Dunne.
I would say no. I don't know any Irene Dunne stories.
So they were circling, they were getting blown while circling the house.
Irene Dunne's.
Irene Dunne's.
And that makes it better.
You that
makes
tell it that better. Version
yeah.
now from now
yeah,
on?
Yeah. Yeah.
But you'll have to come up with a line that, no, there is no line. You just got the blowjob, and I don't know if she ever knew about it. Probably not.
Ronnie, tell us you bet your life story. Tell us about meeting Groucho. You were so young. Yeah, doing the
well,
business.
I'll tell you what. I was working at the Purple Onion in San Francisco. I was still a college student. You never went to college, did you? Any of you guys? Two of you?
No.
Okay. Well, I graduated, okay? 4 years. Anyway, so I was in my senior year, and I auditioned at the Purple Onion in San Francisco, which was a big nightclub in those days. And the other two acts who auditioned the same time as I did was Phyllis Diller and the Kingston Trio. You remember the Kingston Trio?
Sure. Okay. So, Tom Dooley and...
Yeah, that's right. So, do I have stories about them? Anyway, so we toured for a year and a half together, college concerts. Anyway, so in comes George Fenneman, who was Groucho's... Yeah. And he said, he was there to see Phyllis, and he booked her for the show. And then he knew that I went to San Francisco State, where he went 10 years earlier. And he said, listen, why don't we, let me talk to John Goodell, who's the producer, and see if we can get you on. I said, I'd love it. So that's how I got on the show. Now, when I got on the show, he said, we got to have a gimmick. And I said, oh, I can't think. He said, well, why don't you be a beatnik expert? In those days, it was big beatniks in San Francisco. I said, okay, I don't know anything about him, but I will. So he gave me a few lines. So just before the show started, before I met Groucho, he John Cadell, or his assistant, said to me, now, you're going to meet Groucho in a minute, and you just feed him these lines right here. In the meantime, we'll ad lib around. And I said, now, listen, I am a comedian, so at times I can be very funny. And he said, okay, that's very good. But remember, this is Groucho's show, and it's on film, and we can cut you out at any moment.
Wow.
That's the truth. So I got on the show, and I was just as nice as possible, and he was good to me. The only joke I remember, and it's not funny because they told me to say it, was, what is the definition of a beatnik? It's a guy on the ground looking down. How about that?
Oh.
No, I know. No, it's not funny. But yeah. Anyway, that was my top gag. But Groucho... No, it was. But Groucho was very, very good to me. I won $600. I guessed the duck, a table.
Oh, great. Oh, you guessed the secret word.
Yep, table. And I went out of there about $900 richer, which for a college kid was pretty darn good.
Are you a TV comedian, Ronnie?
No, Groucho, I've never
radio
done
radio comedian?
No, I've never done radio.
Stage comedian?
Very little, no.
Do you ever work the gambling hells in Vegas?
I haven't had the pleasure as yet. I'm just...
Well, where do you work? At PTA meetings?
Well, no, actually, I work these little out-of-the-way, offbeat places like the Purple Onion in San Francisco and some of the clubs.
Had your eyes working on you?
No.
You work in out-of-the-way nightclubs, huh? Well, what kind of customers patronize this type of flip joint?
Well, actually, we have all types of people. I think primarily in San Francisco at the Purple Onion, we have these beatniks from the beat generation.
Well, what is a beatnik?
Well, my definition of a beatnik would be a fellow on the bottom looking down.
The next time I saw him, I was doing the Carson show, and he was in the audience. And he came backstage and said, you're very good. I remember you. You're sort of like Don Adams, which I wasn't, of course. But he went, no. I said, I know. I've been told that, which was a lie. But I accepted it, and that was the last time I saw Groucho. Oh, no. Oh, God, I shouldn't tell you this. I was watching, we went to see a premiere at a Disney film, and behind me, sitting right behind me, was Groucho. This is much later. Groucho with, was it Aaron Fleming? Was that him?
Oh, yes.
Yes, his companion.
Aaron Fleming. And she was with him. And the movie started. My wife was with me, and we were watching, and we were enjoying it. All of a sudden, Groucho says... to nothing. I think it was July 8th. Now, what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to July 8th, what? What? We didn't say anything, but that was the last time I communicated.
Oh, he was starting to lose it.
I guess so. I think it was July 8th. But I know, I don't think Aaron even asked him what the date was or anything like that. But he was awfully good to me. I got to be honest with you. He was very good to me when I saw him both times. And did the show.
And you said, like, a lot of people found him really, like, mean and rude. But you didn't.
No, not at all. Not at all. In fact, George Fenneman used to have lunch with him every day at Nate Nell's. You know where Nate Nell's is out?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Still, Nate Nell's still out there?
Yeah, it's doing great.
And before we switch to another story, may I say, I think it was July 8th.
He's getting a little old Groucho, Ronnie.
Oh, is that Groucho? Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's his Groucho.
July 8th. Yeah, right. That's right. That's good. That's good.
I think it was July 8th.
Aaron Fleming's going to kill me.
Aaron, she's gone.
Aaron. Oh, is she gone?
Oh, Aaron's gone. Aaron took her own life.
Did she really?
Yes, indeed.
Well, fuck her then. That's over.
Oh. Aaron,
move on.
Could July 8th. Please. Could you please shoot yourself? It would really make my life a lot nicer if you would go into an alleyway. I'd like you to become a homeless woman and then find a gun and blow your fucking brains out. It would make my life a lot easier.
Very good. Very good. I like that.
I've lost it.
No, I like that. I like that.
Oh, my God.
I heard a story that Nat Pendleton.
I know who Nat Pendleton was. He was a wrestler.
Yes.
Yes, that's right.
He used to stand naked with a chicken.
Oh, stop.
And Groucho
would holler.
Who had gone senile even back then, would sing,
you simply gotta fuck a chicken.
Only you, Gilbert, could come up with a funny line like that.
Oh, I said.
I'm serious.
Pendleton's in horse feathers. Yes. He's one of the kidnappers. Yes. Yeah. Ronnie, tell us about your act back then. You did pantomime. You did lip syncing.
I started doing lip syncing, but I would be a little different. I would take serious records and make them funny. Where I wouldn't take a Spike Jonze record and then you'd be laughing at the record. And I take La Donna Mobile by Mary Alonza and all the serious stuff. And what happened was I finally went in the service because the Korean War started and I was scared to death of being in the Army or the Marines. So I joined the Air Force and they asked me to MC a show when I was in basic. And I stole a complete pantomime act that I'd seen in San Francisco by a guy named Paul Desmond. And not the musician, but comedian, and that's how I got started. And then slowly I started doing more live stuff, and you know, Irwin Corey started that way.
Stealing other people's material, you mean?
Oh no. Probably no, but doing pantomime.
Oh, pantomime.
And
Jerry, right, right.
And Jerry Lewis.
Right.
He still does it. He does that typewriter thing.
Oh, yes.
I think Dick Van Dyke, too, did pantomime with another guy.
Yeah. What were they called? The Merry Moots.
The Merry Moots. Right.
Out of Atlanta.
That's right.
Oh, I know the Van Dyke family back. Jerry was my best man at my wedding. His brother.
Funny man, Jerry Van Dyke. How's he doing?
Not too well.
I'm sorry.
He had an
Very
accident.
Funny man.
He was funnier. He's funnier than Dick. He's not more talented, but he, by God, when you used to see him on stage, he was absolutely hysterical. He just had an accident recently in Arkansas, I think, and they had to encase him in a body thing and sing. He's not doing too well. He's a good guy.
Too bad. Very funny man.
He was best man at my wedding.
We will return to Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast after this.
And now back to the show. Tell us about some of those clubs back then. You did the Hungry Eye. You did the Blue Angel. You did these legendary clubs.
Yeah, I did the Blue Angel. And Sinatra came in opening night. And I was, you know how it happened? I think you're going to find this interesting. I hope. I'd done the first show, and so I went back and sat in the lobby, not in the lobby, but in the showroom, and all of a sudden, I looked over my shoulder, and incoming to sit was Natalie Wood and Robert Wagner, first time around,
mm-hmm.
and Earl Wilson, you know Earl Wilson, the columnist?
Oh, the columnist, sure, yeah. Earl's Pearls.
Jimmy Van Heusen. The writer.
Sure.
And then all of a sudden, so I turned back and all of a sudden, and you hear stories about this, but it was true. I felt a glow in the room. and I turned around, and it was Sinatra. Came in, sat down with a girl. I remember the girl because I got to know her later. Judy Meredith was his date at that time. She was an ice skater. And there's no end to this story other than he really gave me three paragraphs in the New York, I don't know, whatever the one Earl Wilson used to be part of. Mm-hmm. And it was thanks to Sinatra that sort of got me started off.
Who was playing the clubs in those days that you were in? You were in the Hungry Eye. As I said, you were in the Blue Angel. You were lots of other places. Cosmo Alley,
when I worked there, was owned by Theo Bakel.
How you go? Theodore Bakel reference, Gil. Yeah. He one of Gilbert's favorites.
I mentioned him a few times on the podcast.
He was a great singer. Nichivo, nichivo, nichivo. You know, a big guy.
Sure.
That was he did Russian songs.
Yeah.
Yeah, he acted.
I understand he had a big schwanz.
Oh my God.
Yep.
This is a scoop.
Girls used to tell me that. Anyway.
Who told you?
Several girls.
So Theodore Bakel had a giant dick.
Yes.
I'm
going to get sued. He just died last year.
I know.
Well, now I miss him even more.
He was a genius. He was a genius. So anyway, I worked with him, and you know who was the another owner? Lenny Bruce.
Oh, that's cool.
Wow.
So what happened in those days, you could call Cosmo Alley, and it was a little sort of like a jazz club, and you could go in there, and Lenny would come on and sing. Theo would come in and sing part of it, and then Lenny would sing till midnight, and then I'd work from 12 to 4. And I'd have a lot of wonderful guests like Faye Bainter.
Faye Bainter.
Remember Faye Bainter?
Sure.
People like that. Anyway, that was at Cosmo Alley. You asked about Cosmo Alley.
Yeah.
And that was, and I loved Lenny because he was very nice to me, but we never actually hung out together. I think he was on something, but I don't know. I don't know for sure.
What was Rickles around then and Fat Jack Leonard and some of these guys?
Yes.
Burns and Carlin?
Burns and Carlin. I used to hang out with Jack Burns when he was with George Carlin.
Yeah.
They had an act, and I was working the Purple Onion. He was working the Hungry Eye. And
in San Francisco.
He's become a recluse.
We wanted to get him on the show, but we haven't.
I tried to get him on to do some shows, and he will not. In fact, nobody knows where he lives. He won't tell anybody where he lives. That's how much of a recluse he is. But he'll talk to you on the phone.
I think George Carlin's daughter, Kelly, who we had on the show, is in touch with him. But she told us that dice, because we'd love to talk to Jack Burns.
You're absolutely right.
That was Jack Burns, who used to be with Burns and Schreiber.
Right. Yes, that was later.
Sure.
That guy. And he also did a year on the Andy Griffith Show.
Yes.
But they won't have him. I mean, they would love to have him, but he won't do it.
That's a
shame. He'd make a lot of money.
And, very funny man.
Very funny man.
Hello, Ron. That's the way he talked. Black Irish. He's a black Irishman.
Yeah.
You know, black Irishmen are the guys that used to drink. I worked with him at the Blue Angel. The reason I was there is because the reason that it was memorable is because the star of the show that 4 weeks was Diana Trask, who was an Australian singer that Sinatra worshipped.
I remember the name.
Yeah, Diana Trask, Australian. And so that's why he came initially to see her. But of course, when I went out there, I stole the show away from her. It's another story. Anyway, she was the headliner there in Ruth Olay. Do you remember Ruth Olay? She was a jazz singer. Where was her in Chicago? Oh, how about at the Palmer House? I worked there three times. Once with Pete Fountain.
Oh, sure. Pete Fountain. You know, the jazz man.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Out of New Orleans. But in those days, it was the lead guy was a big fat guy. I can't think of his name. Anyway. We worked there, and then the second time I worked there with Judy Garland's other daughter.
Oh, Lorna Luft.
Lorna Luft. Very good singer, by the way. Very good singer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. How did you get from doing stand-up and doing and the nightclub act to TV, Ronnie? What was the break? I know a Dandy Griffith show was a very early credit.
Very, very true.
And Patty Duke show?
Yeah. Patty Duke, I did three of those. I loved her. She was a good girl. I wish I had some salacious stories about her, but I don't. Anyway.
You can make one up.
Let me think about it.
Patty Duke.
Oh, did you love? Yeah, she was a great actress.
Yeah, she was the best. Well, you were managed by the famous Richard Link.
That's how it happened. I was start touring with the Kingston Trio. In fact, their second album, if you get hold of it, it's got Capital, and it's called College Concert. And we did it from Royce Hall at UCLA. Mm-hmm. And all I did was introduce the trio on the record. It's on the record. And I did the liner notes on the back. And so I told everybody that I had the best-selling comedy record in the business, which I did, even though all I said was, here are three young men in song that I love working with. I love the way they sing, and they like the way I do their shirts. The Kingston Trio. That's my comedy album. Sold millions.
Yeah.
Did you work with, like, were there a lot of mobsters?
Yes.
When you were doing it?
Absolutely. Yeah, in fact, in Chicago is where I really met a lot of them. I'm not going to name his, because I can't remember, but there was one guy who took a liking to me. And after the show one night, he said, you want to come over to I'm doing a thing at the Sahara out by the airport. You want to come over and have breakfast or what? They always gave you, or what?
Scary.
When you used to dance with the guys from New York, you want to dance or what? No, or what? I don't know. How about or what? Anyway, I said yes. So there was a group of us that were working in Chicago, and we went. This is a true story. That's not funny either. We went out to this place called the Sahara, and this guy was notorious, but he took a liking to me. He was a little guy, and so we sat there with 15 people about 3 o'clock in the morning, and we all ordered and eggs. And all of a sudden, the waiter comes in, he brings the eggs, he lays them down, and the eggs were too cold for this little guy, and he got up and just beat the living shit out of this in front of us. And not one of us got up and said, hey, no, cut it out.
Wow.
Because we were scared to death. We let this waiter have the shit kicked out of him rather than, that's the end of the story, but it's just... It was sort of sad, but not sad enough for me to interrupt this little mafia guy. Anyway, that guy's probably still in the hospital. This was 50 years ago. For
Christ's sake. Oh, my God.
Oh, that is scary.
I'll tell you his name when we go off camera, because I'm not going to take any chances.
No. I'm sure he's long gone, Ron.
Or at you know least what happened? You know what happened? Seriously?
Yeah.
He was bringing groceries home, and he got machine gunned to death. So he probably defied some of the bigger people.
Wow.
Ooh.
But in conclusion, and I want this spread around, the mafia was very good to me. I worked, most of the clubs back then were owned by the boys. And if they liked you, man, you could do no wrong. And they would just be so good to the, and they love comedians. And I was never intimidated by them. I think they even owned the Blue Angel, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, we've had a couple of people tell us that the mob was good to them.
Yeah.
On this show.
Yeah.
Various comics.
The performers said that you couldn't have a nicer boss than a mobster.
And you know what they'd say? Seriously, they'd say, listen, if anybody gives you any trouble, call Geraldo and we'll take care of it. And that's exactly right. I never had to call Geraldo, but he would have taken care of it with the boys. That's true.
So go ahead.
I heard a story that Buddy Hackett.
I love Buddy.
I think his house was robbed. And then they found the two guys that robbed my house.
You'll do anything to do impressions.
Yes, that's
an excuse.
Yes,
you make up these names, and I'll do Clark Gable when I ran into him. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And he said, they found them both dead in the desert. And they said,
do you know what happened to them? And he goes, I don't know.
That could be true. That could be true. How about this? Scarlett, you've never loved me. You've always loved anyone else but me. I don't give a damn. That was my impression of Clark Gable. Not too
pretty good.
Good. That's the only one. I do Clark Gable sneezing.
Okay.
Let's hear it.
This is Clark Gable sneezing. Drop, 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 too. Remember, he always used to say, God damn it. You've always loved Ashley Wilkes. You've never loved me. Anyway.
Well, tell us how the Kingston Trio album went big, and I'm trying to figure out how your TV career got started.
Oh. So Dick Link worked for Capitol.
He just passed away, by the way, Richard Link, last year.
99 years old, drinking vodka every night.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Legendary manager.
It was a good guy. And he was my manager until he sort of semi-retired over in Hawaii. But and Andy got rid of him. Whew, that was a sad story. But which I'm not telling unless I'm asked. So
and Andy Griffith, you mean?
Andy, that was his right hand man. So he was handy.
I'm asking.
Let me do my own story first.
Yeah,
okay. I was asked. So anyway, Clark Gable wasn't around at that time, but I had to get his name in there. Dick Link managed Andy Griffith, and he worked for Capitol, and he saw my act in San Diego and said, I'd like to manage you. And I said, I don't have a manager. And that's how I got there. And then about, I say, within a year, Andy did a spinoff from the Danny Thomas show.
Right.
And then after Andy did it, then Jim Nabors came as Gomer Pyle, and they did a spinoff of that. And by that time, Dick Link was the associate producer of both those shows, and he said, I want to work you into the Gomer Pyle show. And I said, do I have to audition? He said, yeah, for Carl Reiner and
Sheldon Leonard,
yeah. And I was nervous. And I went, and they were very good, and that's how I got Gomer Pyle from that audition. And the rest, of course, is history.
Hey, here's another one. Guess who this is? For it was Mary, Mary, sweet, as any name could be, for you were the guy that gave it to my brother in the back.
Hey, that's great, dude. Betty Grable, right?
Are you making a joke, ain't you, Frankie? That was Humphrey Bogart, wasn't it, dude?
It was Jimmy Cagney, Gomer.
Well, that was the second, Charlie.
Here's another one. Guess who this one is, Gomer?
Carl.
Hey, Sergeant Carter. Sergeant Carter, you're the best sergeant a Marine ever had. Why, you're just like a mama to us, so thank you, thank you, thank you.
Shazam.
Oh, yeah, I almost forgot. Shazam.
Yeah, we talked on the phone. You and I were talking about also the great Aaron Rubin.
I don't remember that.
Just deserves some credit for that show.
Aaron Rubin was the greatest sketch, series writer of all time. You know who is? He's Nat Hiken's nephew. Nat Hiken, who was very famous.
There you go, Gil.
Oh, I love Nat Hiken.
Yeah, we've talked about Nat Hiken with Hank Garrett, obviously.
Car 54, where are you? And
yeah, but Hank Garrett makes up a bunch of bullshit. I don't care. he wrestles, but he can't drive. Anyway. what were we talking about?
We were talking about how you got Eddie Griffith show, and then Gomer Pyle.
And then Gomer Pyle, and then...
Good Morning World came knocking. Bill Persky and Sam Denoff.
Yeah, well, what happened was I was doing Gomer Pyle, and then all of a sudden I started doing That Girl with Marlo Thomas.
Oh, you were her agent.
Harvey Peck. I'm sure you guys have watched that all the time. And they decided to do a series, a comedy series about two radio disc jockeys based on William B. Williams. Is that?
Because Billy and Sam worked for him.
That's right.
They were writing about their own lives.
Exactly. This was all about them, about William B. Williams and when he did that. And so they hired myself and they hired Billy DeWolf. Great, great.
Love Billy DeWolf.
Comedian. Oh, I loved him. He was a great, always busy.
he'd come up on this show a lot.
Yes.
Yeah, and he'd say, Mr. Shell, Put it away. Put it, I mean, save your money. Put it away, Mr. Shell. You never know when it's going to end. And anyway, he became my best friend on that particular show. Joby was a nice guy. Joby Baker.
Yeah. He's still around.
Yes, Joby. He lives in Connecticut. Yeah. He was married to Dory Previn.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and then she passed away. I think he killed her. And I'm kidding. I love Joby, and I love Dory, even though I never met her. And so we did that show. And
with Goldie.
Andy Griffith was doing a special during that time. We all worked on the same lot where we did That Girl and all these other shows and Hogan's Heroes and everything like that. And in walked, Bill and Sam saw this little girl out of a go-go dancer out of Baltimore, which was Goldie Hawn. Mm-hmm. And she was in the chorus. And so they said, oh, God, she's got a great personality. Let's put her in. So they hired her to be my girlfriend. And we did 29 episodes. And, you know, it was free and easy in those days. You know, we weren't married. I wasn't married, and she wasn't married. And we always rehearsed in my apartment at night. You do the math, okay? And, I'm kidding, Goldie. I'm turning Kurt. And so, anyway, after about 3 weeks on the first show, she was tired. She didn't like to rehearse. And I said, Goldie, I took her aside. I said, Goldie, you're never going to make it because you don't like to rehearse, and I don't like that. Pros know the script inside and out, and that's because you're not going to make it. And the next year, she won the Academy Award for The Cactus Flower, and I found out while working some toilet in Omaha. True story. She never let me forget it, by the way. She never let me forget it.
You know what's strange? You were talking about who created the Gomer Pyle show. And mm-hmm. I remember Aaron when Rubin. I was growing up, I'd watch these shows like Gomer Pyle and Andy Griffith and think I was getting a glimpse of, like, you know, Southerners and Gentiles. And it was all
Jews from New York.
Yeah. It was all total Jews.
Sheldon Leonard.
I'll tell you the truth. Yeah. I'll tell you the truth on Aaron Rubin. Aaron Rubin, before he did Andy Griffith, he went and spent a week, it might have been a month, in North Carolina to pick up the tone and the people. And that's, he did his homework. And by the time he came back, he could write about them. That is the one of the reasons that it works so well with the Southerners.
It's amazing. And a Jewish guy spends a month in North Carolina and manages to capture the flavor.
Yes.
And that show went on forever. And one of the things it was lauded for was its authenticity.
Yes, but how come there were no black people on there?
It's an excellent question.
Think about it. There were, but they were in the background.
Now, are you saying you fucked Goldie Hawn?
No, not at all. No, please don't.
There was a chicken involved.
Kidding. Hey, I just love to do the line. You do the math, okay?
Tell us about Sheldon Leonard, and you also did his short-lived series, Big Eddie.
Yes, I did. I played a clown in it. Sheldon Leonard was. Whew, he was one of those guys that you, when he walked in the room, you immediately were very subservient and good. But he was very, he would come in when we did Andy Griffith and Gomer Pyle, and he would take a script and just fix it up in like a half hour. And he was a genius. He was a genius.
Yeah.
I remember sort of a sad story. But of course this happens. They were doing a dinner for Don Knotts at, Chasen's,
yeah,
when it was still open, and we all went down there one night, and I don't know if you recall, but they still have them. One of these local 7:30 to 8 shows where they did interviews, and this girl, I was standing there. This young girl was doing the interview, and she said, "Now, you're Sheldon Leonard." He said, "Yes." She said, "Well, what have you done, Mr. Leonard?"
"Oh,"
and he said, "I've been around." That's all he said.
Wow.
And she, I remember that. That was quite a revelation.
Well, not only was he a fun actor, and well, of course he was always playing those thugs He was always playing heavies, and but he was a mogul.
He was a mogul. Yeah. Very rich.
Yeah.
And
super smart guy.
Super smart guy.
What was Frank Sutton like, Ron?
I love Frank. Frank was, believe it or not, was a Southerner. He was born in Tennessee, and that's where he's buried. And I never saw him off stage without a cigar in his mouth, Brazilian cigar, I might add, or a cup of coffee. And that's what made him, or not made him, but he was a type A, and he was destined to have an early heart attack. Great actor, always knew his lines, and was very nice to all of us, because a lot of us were newcomers. You know, he'd already done Broadway in the Andersonville trial,
uh-huh,
and a couple others. Mm-hmm. He was a good friend of George C. Scott's. But anyway, no, I can't say anything bad about him. I wish I could.
Yeah.
He used to have this chicken.
And what did they sing when Frank Sutton stood there naked?
You simply got to fuck that chicken.
This is going to be the new catchphrase that takes off.
Now, you said he started out a liberal.
Oh, that's right. It's interesting.
Yeah, Frank Sutton, yeah.
Yeah, he had a lovely wife and two lovely kids. Toby was his wife. And she was Jewish, by the way. You might want to know that.
He does.
Toby was Jewish. And he was a Southern. He was a, you know, so that's where he may have gotten the liberal slant. But when he first started doing the show, he was just big on Lyndon Johnson and liberals and everything like that.
Interesting.
By the end of five seasons, and then we did two seasons as a variety show, the Jim Neighbors Hour. And by that time, he was a right winger. Not a right winger, but very conservative. The money. It's called money.
Sure.
You make a lot of money and you change, I think. Isn't
that
true?
Well, they say a conservative is a liberal who's been mugged.
I wish I'd have thought of that. By God, I will. You know, I want to tell you a story about Studs Terkel. You know who Studs Terkel was?
Oh, yes.
And this applies to guys my age. You guys aren't there yet. But I hang out with guys in their late 70s and their 80s for a reason. Studs Terkel knew this guy. You may have known this story. Studs Terkel knew this guy, 80-some years old. He was a widower, and he married this woman, 60 years old. And she was really beautiful and well done for her 60-year-old. And it lasted 8 months. And Studs Terkel went to him and said, "My God, what happened? I mean, she was beautiful, 60 years old. What happened?" And he said, "She didn't know the songs."
Wow.
Jeez. And that's it. If you can't relate to young people and you can't remember the songs and everything like that, it becomes sad.
Yeah, that's profound.
I think it's profound.
It is. Gilbert wants to ask you about some of these names, Ron.
You worked with Jack Webb, best known for Dragnet.
The only guy who, when he was sober, was mean, and when he was drunk, was a great guy. That I remember.
Interesting.
He was once married to Julie London. Do you remember that?
Julie London.
Oh,
sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
That was,
sure.
Was before
and then,
then
she married Bobby Troop,
who was a very close friend of mine because Bobby Troop's daughter introduced me to my wife.
Oh. Route 66.
Route 66.
We will return to Gilbert Gottfried's amazing, colossal podcast, but first, a word from our sponsor.
Now, you work with both Ted Cassidy and Jack Cassidy.
Jack was brilliant. Jack was hysterically funny. He thought he was John Barrymore. I mean, at 5 a.m. in the morning, you could come back to the... We were on the road together for 16 weeks when he was married to her, Shirley Jones.
Shirley.
And you could come back at 5 a.m. and he'd been in his suit and just sitting there having a drink. He was he thought he was John Barrymore, reincarnated, and a very good actor, I might add.
Oh, yeah, good in comedy.
He and She, do you remember He and She?
Of course. Of course. Yeah. Was that Richard Benjamin and Paul Apprentice?
Paul Apprentice. And I did a movie with Richard called How to Beat the High Cost of Living.
Sure, with Susan St. James.
Susan, who I liked very much.
Jane Curtin.
And, Jane Curtin and Jessica Lange.
You bet.
And my friend, Freddie Willard.
Fred Willard, right.
Good guy.
Now, Cassidy had a hate. I don't know if there was a love there. There was definitely bad feelings between him and his son.
Oh, David Cassidy, you mean, yeah.
I think, I'll be honest, because I'm going to be in David's court in this day. He was jealous of David. He was jealous. And I remember we were on the road, and we were in Rhode Island, and he was coming to visit, and he said, by God, that little guy's going to take us, whatever he called his son, David's going to take us to dinner. He's going to pay for it because he's made a lot of money. And he did. He made him pay. We had showgirls and all that kind of stuff. And so that was the animosity. It was jealousy. It was Jack's fault, really.
Yeah, because back then, David was like the biggest pop idol.
He was the biggest.
He sure was. And, tell us about Maury Amsterdam, who was a friend of yours.
Well, the only reason I knew Maury is because he was from San Francisco. He was born and raised in San Francisco. And it's interesting, at the height of his career, you know, we worked at the same, on the lot. And he said, I'm from San Francisco. And I said, yeah, I know. He said, yeah, goddamn Herb Cain never mentions me. Now, like, Maury Amsterdam was nationally known, and he's worried about a San Francisco columnist. Man, wish Herb would mention me.
I love that.
It's a true story. He liked to tell jokes, too.
We just got some we got some names here. That go. Did you work, you did voiceovers on a show called Yogi Space Race with Joe Besser?
Yeah, that's right. Oh, what did he used to say? What was his stock line?
Not so loud.
That's right. I wanted you to do that, Gilbert. And I swear, was that the one who said, I swear I'll kill you? Did he do that, too?
Oh, yeah. He would. Yeah. Yeah,
I swear I'll kill you. Yeah. Yeah, I did that with him, and I thought you were going to mention my all-time favorite of all the people we've talked about.
Yeah.
Sketch comedian.
Oh, Harvey Korman.
Harvey Korman. Nobody touches
him. Well, you guys were tight.
We were very, very close friends. And Harvey Korman was the biggest hypochondriac that ever lived next to me. But he was hilarious, and I don't think anybody has ever topped his Hedley Lamarr in Blazing Saddles.
Oh, it's
brilliant. If you watch it, every single scene, he's just perfect. And of course,
he's electric.
He was. And a good guy, and I miss him. I do miss him.
Was he a happy guy in real life?
Let me ask you something. Have you ever met a big talent who was happy? No. I haven't. you haven't. And especially comedians. The only happy comedian I ever met was Art Linkletter. And I don't count him. I worked with him. I did the only Mork and Mindy that was on an hour. And I worked with Robin Williams. Brilliant. Brilliant. And, you name it. Jonathan Winters. I hung out with Jonathan a lot. And I hung out with the comedians because I learned from them, you know, and I enjoy laughing.
Yeah, you work with Red Fox, too. How about Red Fox? Any
memories? I did Sanford and Son.
Yes, you did.
I played the mayor. The only memory I remember, I can't tell you, but it was
funny. Okay.
It was
that
obscene.
Sounds like
Red.
That sounds like a Red Fox story.
It is a Red Fox story.
What about Frank Gorshin? He was a friend, too.
Frank Gorshin was... We go back way back because we were both in the Air Force and we did shows, Tops and Blue. And I was, for a while, was the traveling comedian with the United States Air Force Dance Band, the Airmen of Note in Washington, D.C. And that was a tough job. I mean, we could have gone over to Korea at any moment, but we never did. But I did get some time in Bermuda. That's the end of the... It's the end of that story.
Who else do you want to know about that Ronnie worked with here, Gil?
Oh, God, it's such a list.
A crazy list, Ronnie. You've done everything. You've worked with everybody. Here's a story that I sparked to
you. I tell you what I got coming up, January?
We're going to do a couple of names, and then we'll do the plugs.
Okay. What am I? Am I a gossip? I sound like a gossip.
What's that?
I know a story about everybody, but, there's a lot of stories I'm keeping to myself.
You don't have to tell them if they're too salty.
Well, they're mostly about me, but go ahead.
What about Paul Winchell? You worked with him.
The great ventriloquist.
Yeah, very good ventriloquist. Yeah, he's like every other comedian. They're not happy.
Yeah.
You know, Gilbert's walking around laughing, making a lot of laughs. He has a family. I have a family, but we're not happy.
No, Gilbert's pretty miserable.
Yeah.
I know. You are. You are, Gilbert. And so are you, Frank, because you're...
Thank you.
You're tagging on.
Thank you, Ron. What about working with Tony Curtis? Bill and Sam wrote something for you.
I'm going to hang myself after this interview.
I don't blame you. I'll tell you, Tony Curtis, when I first met him, we did a football special together. And he was really nice to me. And the first thing I said, hi. And he said, me too.
Tony Curtis seems like he was a fun guy.
He was a fun guy. And this was before he wore that terrible toupe.
Oh, yeah. And the cowboy hat.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. But he was very funny. And I'll tell you, he was a good actor. Did you ever see The Sweet Smell of Success?
Of course.
Oh, yes. With Burt Lancaster. Oh,
masterpiece. Geez.
Yeah, masterpiece. Well, I'm also a movie fan, so the old movies. So I just remember him being very good. And the Defiant ones with...
Of course. Stanley Kramer.
Yeah.
Sidney Poitier. That's right.
And Theodore Bakel.
Was the sheriff. You're absolutely
there you go.
Right. That's
and,
right.
And Lon Chaney Jr. was like Big Joe. Or
hot damn.
I never met Lon Chaney Jr., but I was a fan of his. I mean, nobody ever topped him in Of Mice and Men. With Burgess.
That's Gilbert's favorite.
Oh, that he was brilliant in that.
Who played the little guy where they took the dog away?
Oh, I don't know. I don't remember his name. But he was
a character actor. Yeah, he was great.
Remember the guy from F Troop turns up in there, Bob Steele, the guy that played Duffy.
Yeah,
but Bob Steele started as a B cowboy actor.
Yeah, he was.
Before that, he was a boxer.
Sure thing.
And he lived across the street from my wife when she was still in high school. And he was really a nice guy. I think he was 4'3".
Something
like that.
Oh, he was a little guy. In Of Mice and Men, Burgess Meredith says it about him. He goes, I hate mean little guys.
Ooh, that's right. I'd forgotten about that. How about Betty Fields?
Betty Field, yeah.
Oh,
Betty
yes.
Fields.
Loved her.
As we wrap it up, you're such a W.C. Fields fan, you were telling me on the phone. You want to tell me what you told me about W.C.? Because I thought that was fascinating.
It's there's no connection here except he used to do a lot of scripts, and he had a way of sneaking in dirty lines by changing them just slightly. Like, God damn, he'd say, Godfrey Daniel, he'd say that.
Did you know that, Gil, about W.C. Fields?
Yeah. You watch any or if Godfrey Daniel, he's really and sort of reminded me of you, Gilbert. And I say, Gilbert Gottfried.
It is. It's almost like an exclamation.
Yeah, almost like an exclamation. Gilbert Gottfried. Anyway, he did say that. I'm going to walk away here thinking I'm a big gossip person.
You haven't told any tales out of school.
I'm telling you about my career and my all the wonderful, wonderful people I've worked with. And I hope it's not over. I worked with, I worked with Tony Bennett and Carol Burnett. I did two Carol Burnett shows.
Yeah, you've had to work with everyone.
When Harvey Korman kept saying, I'm funnier than her. I'm funnier than her. She'll be the Harvey Korman show.
Tell Gil about the time you fixed Don Adams up with a date. I like that story.
How did you know? Bill Dana will tell you that.
Wasn't it you who fixed him up?
It was me. No, I fixed Bill Dana up. But what happened was, here's what happened. I was living in San Francisco at the time, and Bill Dana came up, and he was Jose Jimenez.
Sure.
And he'll tell you this. Is he coming on?
We're going to have him on, yeah.
Okay. You asked him to tell the story. And so Bill was looking for a date. And I said, well, look, this is my hometown. I'll fix you up with a chick. He said, okay. So I called this chick who I'd never seen in person, but I talked to on the phone. And I said, would you like to go out with Bill Dana? Oh, my God, I'd love it. And Bill Dana said to me, and he'll quote him. He said, now, what does she look like? I said, she looks like Shirley MacLaine. I said, okay, great. So in she walks into this apartment in San Francisco, and she's about 60 years old and not attractive at all. And Bill, God bless him, went out with her, and the next day he came to me and he said, "Did you say she looked like Shirley MacLaine or Barton MacLaine?"
A Barton MacLaine reference.
Ask him that. That's a true story.
Ronnie, tell us what's coming up again.
Oh, I'm doing this pilot with Ed Asner. And
we
Don
love
Wells.
Ed.
Yeah, Don Wells and whoever's going to replace our lovely departed Florence Anderson, who I loved.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did I ever tell you that story?
No.
You were doing a commercial with her.
Should I tell that? It's not that funny, but it's.
Go ahead.
We were doing. She was the Wesson Oil.
Yeah, Wessonality.
Yes, exactly. And so they hired me to do a thing with her. So we did rehearse, and so the director said, "Okay, let's everybody quiet and action." And just before anybody said anything, a crewman, I don't know who he was, we don't know this day, let a big fart. And we just went into hysterics. And the director said, cut, what's the matter? And I said, "Oh, we were just, Florence and I were just discussing something. Try it again." So believe this or not, director said, "Action." And it was quiet. And the guy let another big fart. We fell over, and the director said, "Lunch."
I think that's how I'll choose to remember Florence Anderson.
Well,
very
she
funny.
She was a good singer. I worked with her at John Oswego's. I worked with everyone. There's no one I never had worked with.
You, it's a long list. Ronnie, right. Ronnie, you had a fantastic career, fascinating.
And it's still going.
Why? Is it over?
Is it over?
Okay.
And
tell the limo, I'll be there.
Okay, before I close out this show, there's something very important that I want to take with me. So the very that? Handsome leading man, Alan Ladd.
Oh, would, come on, his wife's
wait,
alive.
He'd stand naked with a chicken surrounded by girls.
That's apocryphal. That's apocryphal.
And what?
Elena, that's apocryphal.
But what
that's just comedy.
What? Fuck it. I'm saying it's real. Now,
okay.
What did those girls have to sing?
They were dancing around while he was,
yes.
And they sang, "You've simply got to fuck that chicken."
He sounds like Aunt B.
Yeah, oh.
That's
we'll
fantastic.
We'll go into Aunt B the next time you guys interview me.
Ronnie, thanks okay. for doing this, man.
So,
hey,
so I'm
ball.
Gilbert Gottfried, and I'm here with my co-host, Frank Santopadre. This has been Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast with the very funny Ronnie Schell.
And come out to L.A. and we'll have coffee together.
We'll go to Nate and Al's.
Yeah, that's right. We'll run into Larry and you'll come up close and almost kiss us.
Thank you, Ronnie.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, buddy.
Frank, Gilbert, thank you.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.